godly man, and as I've mentioned last week, I will admit to you the reason why I've chosen this topic is because of trends I see both in the country and within the church. I am focusing in on men on this class. It's not that we couldn't have a class, and we should have a class on building a godly woman, but I do believe we're facing a crisis in this culture, and it's affecting the church, where we're seeing a collapse in the leadership of men and even the mental health of men in the culture, from the participation in school and awards given in high school and college to even college participation to suicide rates to mental health issues. We're seeing an absolute crisis. It's very, very alarming if you look at the culture. But now, my focus here is not on the culture. My focus here is upon God's Word in the church, and so I can give some illustrative material about some of the things that's going on within our culture, but I do want to focus in on the church that we do not give into the culture. I really do believe, as I mentioned last week, that we have a lot of major issues that, again, it startles me that we would ever have to face it. But last week in review, we talked about God made both male and female. God made two sexes. You are born male or female. It's not a choice of because you have some mental illness that somehow makes that so. And it's sadly what you've been seeing in the culture is an attempt to create a unisex culture and also a very strong focus upon an attack upon men. I'm not talking about when men do things that are wrong, but I'm talking about the attack upon really what it means to be a man. And that's a huge mistake, whether it be male or female, whether it be dealing with personality types. The innate things God makes us with that are not evil in themselves, we can't call evil. And I mentioned last week, we looked at just some general things from another source about what does it mean to be a man. Men typically are more aggressive, they're more outward. We talked about they were explorative, they were determined to deliver the goods, they need to know what's next, they're opportunistic. Again, this is review, takes chances that the initiator. I mean, boys and males tend to be more aggressive. And we talked about my daughter who's teaching in school. She said she had noticed that boys sometimes in our expression of favor to one another, we can roughhouse. We can kind of, you know, push around and jostle and wrestle and sometimes be aggressive in our language. But it's all meant in good, you know, in a good way. And that's something Yvette and I've had to talk about because, like I said, sometimes I'll get together. We got to visit Bob Simpson in the hospital a few days ago, and there were some men there, and we started joking about Bob and his pain. And Yvette was like, oh, you know, and Bob was smiling, and the other men were smiling. And it's one of those things that, you know, there's some ways we communicate and things we do. Now, I've learned in my marriage that if I do that to Yvette, I get in trouble, you know. And, you know, us guys, sometimes we like to poke at each other, but that doesn't work. But see, there's the understanding the difference in male and female. We cannot take God-given abilities and try to somehow make everybody the same. And that's what's happening in this culture, and there's particular negative focus toward men. You're seeing that in the commercials. You're seeing that in the movies. And I'm concerned for a man. Now I'll tell you how we can overcome it. We can overcome it in our families. We can overcome it in church and let the culture do what it will. And that'll be the focus. I'm not going to be teaching anything new in these studies. But I am raising the alert. Our young men, unfortunately, within many of the public schools, within the culture itself, there are things that are being done that is very, very hurtful. And I'm not saying all public schools are bad. Our children went to public schools. I don't have a problem with that. But we just need to be aware of the trends. And so, as we talk about, and we're getting to the new section here, as we begin now on page 2 of the outline, we want to talk now about, biblically, how do you build a spirit of a boy? We want to raise godly leaders. We want to raise a boy who knows who he is and who God is and their relationship with God. We want to build a boy who takes those aggressive tendencies and with wisdom to know when to stand. And they'll be like Ezekiel was described by God. You're going to have a flint head. Your head's going to be like flint, and you'll resist evil and you'll stand boldly. We need men. Men are the ones who are most best equipped to stand in a crisis and as the warrior to take the opposition. But a godly man under control can stand and lead. Our homes need that. Our churches need that. But now, how do you build it? It starts in the home and it starts in the marriage relationship. Let's first talk about the father. I mentioned this last week and I'll mention it again. When I grew up, there was no better man on earth than my dad. And there were other boys who were raised in good homes, and their dad was better than my dad, and my dad was better than your dad. I admired my father, and I needed time with my father. And I'll have to tell you, in terms of leadership, my dad was a leader. He rose as an enlisted soldier in World War II to a position of a sergeant, but leading an elite group and that trained the troops to take the beach on D-Day. A lot of those troops that died on the front lines probably had, some of them had gone through the training that my dad led them in. At one point, there was a general that wanted to take my dad's unit and let it be the vanguard on D-Day, and they got overruled, and my dad says, "I'm really glad that happened." And so my dad has always been a natural leader. He supervised plants and was in management. But that was good for me. Now, he wasn't the man that he should have been in regards to the Bible and attending church. And that was a weakness of his. But I want to tell you, even in that home, my dad was understanding. He later changed, by the way. And he later became a leader within the denomination that he attended. That leadership eventually took over spiritually, and it was my mother who was the leader in spiritual things. And so if I had one thing to say to my dad, he could have done better, and I know he could, and it's a significant thing, he wasn't the leader spiritually. But I want to talk to you. Dads, love God. Your kids will know what you love. We were joking in the college class about deception, and we talked about how that we do a lot of things without facts or reason. And that's okay. There's some things like, who do you pull for in football? You know, I pull for a different team that most of you pull for. You know why? In 1963, I actually saw the highlights of this game recently on YouTube. My dad took me to an Alabama game. And my dad admired the coach. It was Bear Bryant. And, you know, when I hear things about, you know, I saw something the other day about the death of Bear Bryant and how everybody turned out. You know who I thought about? I thought about my dad. And so it's not like, you know, I don't care who you pull for in football. And I know that football coaches and generals have a lot of faults in them. I'm not trying to put them forward as anybody great. But I'm telling you, I did things with my dad. What my dad liked, I tended to like. And it's interesting. When we had our children, I loved to run. I loved to run races. Is there any coincidence that my boys like cross country and track, and even they run to this day? And so again, these are good things. They're not huge things about sports and things like that. But the most important thing I would want my children to know about me is that I love the Lord and I meant it. And you know, but fathers, you don't have to be the most sophisticated teacher. You don't have to be, you know, the most capable person as far as talents and others. Your heart needs to mean it. Ephesians 6:1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, that you may live long on earth. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. Now, I want to build my children to have a commitment to God because they have built their commitment. But I'm okay that my influence is a powerful one to point them in the right direction. You know, if this culture, I think it is, and is going to be increasingly turning against Christianity, I want my child to know who the Lord is, but then also to have seen his dad stand and with happiness and joy live in this culture and not worry about what the world thinks. And so that's what we need. You're starting out in marriage. You're starting out in your home. The best thing you can do, if you want to build godly men, you want to build your sons and daughters in the right way, have the Lord be put first. And here's a really huge point. How a son views himself and views God depends on the parents. You know, when you've got a home under leadership and it works together and everybody's on the same page, I'm not saying you don't have problems in marriage. I'm not saying there's not some disagreement. But there's something about a well-led home. There's not the prolonged conflict. If there is even conflict, it's handled very carefully. And here's what one writer said. You are the gateway to God the Father in your kids' eyes. If they love and admire and trust you, they will do the same with God. But if you abandon them or refuse to encourage them, they will have to overcome many hurdles in order to trust God. Build a strong relationship with your kids and make them the path to Him and make the path to Him clear. What is good leadership like? Good leadership, you work through things and you come together. It's true of a home, it's true of a church. How do you handle disagreements in your marriage? Disagreements will come, but guess what a leader does? When there's a problem, what does a leader do? Class, what does a leader do?
Lead.
If there is a fire and you're a fireman, what do you do? Flee? Say there's not a problem? Oh, I'll take care of it in a few days. Leaders lead. And I like the picture of the fireman or the policeman. I think of 9/11. Leadership goes to the point of danger because you're going to lead and you're going to protect. Men are good at that if they can develop themselves. They want to lead and protect, yes. 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 You face the difficulties and overcome them. And there's one of the problems we face. If you've got a good marriage, you can work together and communicate. But let's suppose the marriage is not good and you're not communicating. First off, husbands, that ought to bother you. That ought to disturb you. And sometimes the answer is really easy. I'm thinking if the problem is on our end, you know what we need to do if we've got a problem in our marriage? Are you ready for this? I'm going to give you the L word. Listen. If you have a godly mate, she wants to be heard. And she'll give you some good advice. Now, she may not be right about everything. But you see, sometimes a godly man will do things that are not easy. And they'll go the extra mile to try to listen and learn. If you don't have a good marriage, then let me tell you some things that happens. Your child will blame themselves and not have confidence. You may say, wait, it's our problem in our marriage. I want to tell you, and even as the children get older, I'm telling you, conflict in marriage, divorce, has consequences that most of us cannot imagine. I can remember one time my dad losing it. It was in the morning, getting ready to go to work, and started screaming at my mother. That is the only time in my life I ever remember that happening. And you know what my feeling was as a child? I was afraid. And I remember walking into my bedroom and picking out the door. And it was like 5 in the morning. My dad was going to work early in the morning. And I remember how that made me feel. I felt bad. I felt bad about myself. Now, fortunately, that didn't happen again. So, you know, that event was one-time event. I never remember anything like that happening again. Did you know that God chose parents for Jesus and John? He chose the parents of the one that was going to lead Jesus and certainly the one that was going to carry Jesus. Zacharias and Elizabeth, the parents of John the Baptist, says Luke 1:6, and they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blameless. In Luke 1:42, we read about Mary, and as Elizabeth spoke to Mary, he says, "Blessed are you amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb." And Joseph was described as a just man. And so again, parents, if you love the Lord, and men, if we learn to lead and communicate the same processes from which we, and by the way, how many of you men fully understand your wives and you know everything? Okay. If you do right now, the next day you won't. And by the way, be the same thing for the wife to the husband. We're changing. Things change. Events change. And good leadership, are you ready for this, is teachable. In Judges 13 and verse 8, after an angel had appeared and saying a son was going to be given, I appreciate what Manoah did. Manoah prayed to the Lord and said, "Oh Lord, please let the man of God, that's an angel, whom you sent come to us again and teach us what we shall do for the child who will be born." I want to tell you, marriage is complicated and raising children is complicated. You think you've got it together and you've got it figured out, and I'm glad when things go smooth. But trust me, life and our own children will have a way of, we'll end up facing things that we never dreamed of. And I find myself quite often asking for help. And that's all I'm saying. The psalmist in Psalms 25 and verse 4, "Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day." Security. Let's talk a little bit. And let me just throw this out at you guys for a little bit, lest I do all the talking. What happens to a child when they are not secure? What happens to a child that is in a home where there's anger and there's not communication and they see bad attitudes of the wife to the husband and the husband to the wife and they don't talk? What happens? What are the consequences of that? One day your child likely is going to be married, won't they? How do you handle marriage? Where have you learned things? One of the great challenges we face today as marriage breaks down and there's greater divorce, you know what greater divorce will sometimes lead to? Even more divorce. If someone has never seen a normal relationship, they don't know how to conduct themselves. But let me tell you what happens to a person inside. When the parents don't get along and you can't talk to your parents, what happens? How does a child in that environment feel about themselves? How do their self-esteem, if we use that view, how they view themselves as a person? Does anybody want to comment on that? Yes. If you are hurting, what do you do? I'm just speaking even of a physical hurt. What do you do if you've got a physical pain and it's regular hurt and it doesn't go away? What do you want to do?
Relieve it.
You want to relieve it. And there's a lot of ways that's done. You'll typically find people who struggle with depression, and again, there's a lot of reasons for depression beyond this, but the more typical one is, when I hear somebody struggling with depression issues, I ask, what was their home like? And oftentimes, when you come out of a home where there's not communication, the child does not learn how to deal with inward pain. They don't know how. They don't know how to cope. And they feel very bad about themselves. And guess what? You view yourself as low life. You view yourself as a bad person. You view that something's wrong with you. Guess what will happen in time if that's not dealt with? you'll live down to your own inward expectations. And then you're very vulnerable, as is mentioned here. You need some kind of leadership. If it doesn't come from the home, you're going to find another source. And what's that source going to be?
You're going to do whatever it takes to get attention.
Yes. Yeah, your child wants attention, and so therefore you create it. Sometimes a child will misbehave. Guess what? At least I interact with my parents. You may say, that's crazy. That is not an uncommon response. Make your marriage strong. Start on it before children come, and stay humble. Now, what we need to do in making marriage strong, we need to build one another up. And men need to be men, and women need to be women. Now, I understand sometimes, I recognize it just takes two to do this. And it's to my frustration as a shepherd, sometimes there are great problems, and you don't have both come to you and say, help me. You can't fix something when you don't have two people wanting to help and work on things. Proverbs 14:1. The wise woman builds her house, but the foolish pulls it down with her hands. I'm talking about men and women, and let's talk about the foolish woman. If the foolish woman comes to hate her husband, and I just want to use words, sometimes people want to hide around that, play games with it. If the foolish woman hates her husband, what does the foolish woman do? I'm speaking of the one that just has no regard for God. What would they do?
Find someone else.
Huh?
Find someone else.
Find someone else? What if they stay in the home? What do they do?
Make life miserable for their mate.
Yeah. They make life miserable. What if there's children? You know, generally, even ungodly people control their spirit and tongue where they don't do things in front of the children. But I've seen situations, generally out of the church, as I'm almost unheard of in my experience, but where the woman literally recruits the children to attack the father, and the father is put down all the time, and the children develop a bitterness toward the father. It could work the opposite way as well. All I'm saying is that if you're building a home and you have tender souls in that home, you do not want to put your children in adult situations. The fool does that. And I want to say, if there's no children, one of the worst things, wives, you can do is first off criticize your husband to everybody on earth. That becomes your evangelism. And even as you talk with your husband, you need to have some balance. If it's a constant criticism, if it's constant tearing down, and you can't do anything right, most husbands, they're going to go somewhere else. And I'm not saying, again, you say, well, there's two sides. Of course there is. But I'm trying to direct it toward one person at a time. Don't tear your house down. You know who suffers the most from a bad marriage? And when you don't have control of your temper, do you know who suffers the most? Your children. And I've tried to talk with preachers about this. Preachers sometimes can be misused, and sometimes there's two sides of that story as you talk about it in the local church. But sometimes in working with the preachers, I beg them, don't become bitter. Don't bring all this stuff before your children and let your children become bitter at how you've been abused by the church, because your children will draw some conclusions you wouldn't want them to. They'll become bitter toward brethren. You do not want to plant those seeds in children. Proverbs 31:27. Let's look at another alternative. The worthy woman. In Proverbs 31:27, she watches over the ways of her household. Notice, she's not first. She's looking for her household. And does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Why do you think her children rise up and call her blessed? What kind of language do you think has come from her tongue during her life? She would be the one to show grace, wouldn't she? And she's instilling it in her children. Her husband also, he praises her. Wonder why the husband does that. Hey, women, by the way, and your husbands, us guys, respect is probably one of the greatest needs we have. And if we do something right, I'm not talking about flattering us when we're doing that which is wrong, but if we do something right, try a little praise. Just try a little praise. And many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is passing. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. We're going to make an extra class out of this outline. And let's now talk about discipline. Let's look at Hebrews 12, 7 through 11. We'll read it, then we'll talk about it. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you're all without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Let's look at this verse. Now this is punitive discipline, but let's talk about the word discipline even outside this context. When you have a father disciplining his son, tell me what that means. The broadest context of the father disciplining the son, what do you think of? What does that mean? It's teaching. Go ahead.
Correction.
It's teaching. Now, my father disciplined me in several ways, and sometimes it was joyful, and it did involve punishment. I still can remember my dad trying to emphasize how careful it is when I'm behind the wheel of a car. He told me, I may get the illustration wrong, but he says, you know, when you got behind the wheel of a car, it's like, you know, Russian roulette, you know, and he said something about a gun put to your head. And what he was trying to tell me is that you've got to be careful. And you know what? I remember that. When my dad looked at me and said, son, I want you to think about this, I remembered it. And we'd go fishing. I loved to go with my dad fishing. By the way, fathers, your sons like to do something with you, find out what it is and do it. I don't care if you don't like it. Learn to like it. You know what fishing was about? Did my dad want me to become a pro fisherman? Do you know what I learned? You know what you do when you fish? You catch fish about every 5 minutes, right, when you go fishing, right? You're sitting there with that hook in the water, and guess what? You got a lot of time to do. Talk. And see, that's what I appreciate about my dad. And you know, I used to, again, I know I'm getting off on something, but my brother struggled in school. And he struggled with anger. Books were not his thing. And my dad never coached my ball team except one time. And I made the All-Stars that year when I did it. But he always coached my brother's team. But I look back on it, my brother was struggling in school. He was struggling with things. And what my dad did, he tried to get as close to my brother as possible. By the way, my brother ended up being great. He ended up needing to do a trade and not school. He was not a book guy. And once he found out what he could do, he made a great father, had a great marriage. But I look back on that. My dad was looking out for us boys. And he made sure he stayed in touch with us. Now, a godly father. Now, let's talk about discipline. Is there time for punitive discipline? Can we just talk about it and everything's okay? Should we spank our children? Of course. And you know what? Did that make me draw closer to my dad or further away from him when he spanked me? I can remember. Oh, he had a talent. He didn't spank me much. You know why? I didn't want to experience that. And I still remember that he would have me go into the bathroom and prepare myself for the spanking, and I had to wait on him. You know what the hardest part about that was? Waiting. When discipline came, it was something I didn't want to experience again. But you know, it wasn't just him being angry and going in there and jumping and doing things. He explained it to me, and then he disciplined me. Did that make me closer or more distant from my dad? Closer. You know what's sad about this verse in Hebrews 12:7? What jumps out at you in verse 7 that absolutely today I would... It's a rhetorical question, but it's not a rhetorical question anymore. What's the rhetorical question in Hebrews 12:7? What son is there whom a father does not chasten? But today, do we have fathers who do not chasten? Divorce, this culture, and one of the things in our culture, somebody can live apart from a breadwinner. And there's a lot of things that's happening in our culture. And that's sad to me. But see, chastening was good. You know, I know this sounds crazy, but we thought we had child rearing down when we had Stephen and Nathan, and so Lord gave us Emily. And we found out there was a whole new level of things to learn and a whole new level of discipline. And one of the things I would tell my daughter stories, bedtime stories, I'd make them up at night. And you know what one of her favorite stories were? When I told the story of how I misbehaved and my dad gave me a spanking. She loved spanking stories. But in those stories, by the way, they weren't violent. They were things, okay, here's what I did. I needed to learn from it. And, you know, we had to have a few chastening episodes with our daughter as well. And with that strong will. And we're thankful. And we have great respect out of that. But we need to do that. Let me ask, just for you, how do you know if chastening is working? Let's throw this out to parents. How do you know if chastening is working? Behavior changes. You know one thing that I didn't fear very much? I can admit this now. When my mother spanked me. We kind of learned that you had to kind of act like it hurt. She got better. She learned how you get the switch and you got to pull the, you know, it got the narrower the switch, the more it works. But we kind of had to, then my brother and I sometimes would laugh. Yeah, okay, so. And sometimes when we talk about discipline, it's not just spanking. You know, I could see the case of with my daughter sometimes, the spanking. Sometimes a strong-willed person, meh-eh. What do you do in discipline? What's the bottom line when you are trying to inflict discipline with wisdom? What should discipline be according, if we can go back to verse 11. What should discipline be?
It includes the idea that you're training obedience to authority.
Yes. And the point I'm looking for, too, it doesn't need to be joyful. It needs to actually be painful. And the point I want to make is sometimes it may not be just the spanking. You know what would affect someone like my daughter Emily? For them to be by themselves, to go to their room. Sometimes you take away something that is very dear to them. So I'm telling you, when it comes to discipline, you've got to be aware. It needs to be something they don't want to happen. And you could be like my mother was, who did her best. There were times she disciplined and it had no effect on us. But see, this is all done in love. This is all done with the goal of trying to make someone better, of communicating, of teaching, and changing behavior. Okay, we'll pick up, we'll finish up the lesson next week. First bell? Okay, well, I'll give Gilmore. Another thing about discipline is not just when something bad happens, is when we need the discipline. What's the best kind of discipline? Seeing ahead. And anticipating something ahead of time and talking to your child about it. I appreciate that about my parents. And one more thing. Parents, are you a teacher? You a Bible student? You're going to be a teacher. If you have children, you're going to be a teacher. And I want to tell you now, the effort that you make to improve your communication and listening skills, regardless of your ever used publicly, you will be needing those in your children. What? Go ahead.
I think the one comment I would make, though, is more of an active parenting.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So when the situation arises, take the time to address behavior you're seeing. And it's not necessarily your kid's behavior.
Yeah.
You can point out other behaviors that you're seeing. And you can ask your kids, is that how we should act? And you're reinforcing. So
yes.
I think as an active parent, you take the opportunities they present themselves, and you make sure that you're taking it as a 24/7 type of thing versus a point in time.
Yeah.
That I need to provide discipline or encouragement or education. I think it's a proactive approach to, which, as you see things, as things in life come up, take the time to pause, have the conversation, and so it starts to resonate.
Yes.
And they will actually play it back to you when they see things.
Yeah.
And therefore you know that those behaviors are starting to ingrain themselves, if that's not right, and they're bringing it to
yeah.
your attention
yeah.
versus something happened with them and you're having to correct.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I did spanking stories was that I would tell my daughter about some things I did. By the way, I knew she was having some struggles with that too, so I just kind of gave that as illustration. So there's a lot of ways you can see it, but you're trying to get them, like I say, to see. As it said about, one person said, everybody has a purpose. If nothing else, you can serve as a bad example. And sometimes, you know, there are those bad examples out there that you can talk with your children about. What happens to the child who's not disciplined? Why does a parent not discipline their child? What is the mentality? If I discipline my child, then what?
They won't love me.
They won't love me, and they get right the opposite. They ended up having real problems later. Thank you for your participation. We'll